Hey, this is Jeremy. Just wanted to hop on before the episode started with a few announcements. We really want to hear from you, and perhaps the best way to do that, we actually have a subreddit now. It's just r/polyphonicpress, and I'll leave a link to it in the show notes. But it's always been my dream to have a community where we can all get together and talk about the albums that we review and just music in general. So if you want to join the community and start the community, really, because it's quite small right now, it's just r/polyphonicpress. And you can always help out the show in various ways. You can check out our Patreon and get these episodes the day before that they go live, and leave a rating and a review on Apple Music or Spotify or wherever you're listening. Those are great ways to get in touch with us as well. That's it. I just wanted to say that. And now on to the episode. Thank you.
Press, the podcast where two music fans pick a classic album completely at random. Using the patented random album generator, they are given an album to review from a curated list of over 1,000 classic releases, spanning multiple genres. And now onto the show. Here are your hosts, Jeremy Boyd and John Van Dyke.
Hey, welcome to Polyphonic Press. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
And I'm John Van Dyke.
And let's not waste any time. We've got the patented random album generator right in front of us here. So let's hit the button and see what album we're going to be listening to this week.
Well, we never waste time.
Never waste time. All right, and the album we're going to be listening to is The Who, My Generation.
Okay, so we're going back to mid-60s here.
We are. So let's see what it says on allmusic.com. It says, an explosive debut and the hardest mod pop recorded by anyone. At the time of its release, it also had the most ferociously powerful guitars and drums yet captured on a rock record. Pete Townshend's exhilarating chord crunches and guitar distortions threatened to leap off the grooves on My Generation and Out in the Street. Keith Moon attacks the drums with a lightning, ruthless finesse throughout. Some maximum R&B influence lingered in the two James Brown covers, but much of Townshend's original material fused Beatlesque hooks and power chords with anthemic mod lyrics, with The Good's Gone, Much Too Much, La 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 Lies, and especially The Kids Are All Right being highlights. A Legal Matter hinted at more ambitious lyrical concerns, and The Ox was instrumental mayhem that pushed the envelope of 1965 amplification with its guitar feedback and nonstop crashing drum rolls. While the execution was sometimes crude and the songwriting was not as sophisticated as it would shortly become, The Who never surpassed the pure energy level of this record. Yes, it's the original 1965 track listing. So there's 12 songs and it's split evenly, 6 and 6. So if you're listening along, the album will start out on the song Out on the Street, and it'll end on the title track, My Generation. That's side one, and we'll stop halfway through and, you know, discuss and dissect the first side of the album. And I think we're pretty much ready. Here we go. Here is the first song on the album called Out on the Street. Okay, ending side one with the title track, and probably their signature song, I would say, is My Generation.
It's their signature song for a certain time period of The Who, anyway. Their 60s stuff is probably, that's like the song. So,
and it's funny, they used to close every show with that song, and it would end in Pete and Keith destroying their instruments. And yeah, many guitars were
sacrificed in the name of their generation. Yes, I still love the Smothers Brothers episode that they appeared on. That's just class. That's one of my favorite clips on YouTube. Is just that their performance. For one thing, John Entwistle's playing is like on point. I mean, I can't believe what he's doing with his fingers. But yeah, when Chaos just breaks out, it's just completely ridiculous. And then hearing about the backstory behind it.
Yeah, if you don't know the backstory, basically what happened was it was their first time on American television, and they wanted to make a big impression. And so they were going to play two songs. I can't remember what the first song was. I think it was I Can See for Miles, maybe. But anyway, the other song was My Generation. And they wanted to have some pyrotechnics to sort of, you know, have some smoke and have some explosions go off and just like have a big, you know, finale to the whole thing. And in rehearsal, what they did was it went off pretty good, but the explosion wasn't quite
up to Keith Moon's standards.
The effects guy said, okay, we'll make it bigger. So he puts a little more gunpowder or whatever in the explosive, and they all, you know, break for lunch or whatever. And while they're on break, Keith Moon walks over to his, that's the thing, is he was supposed to trigger the explosion it was like a foot pedal. So he was supposed to trigger it with his foot, and it was supposed to make this big thing. While everybody's at dinner or lunch or whatever, he goes and puts more gunpowder in it. And so, yeah, it's everything's cool. They do the song. And at the end of it, it's this huge boom. It's the biggest explosion. I'm sure
pieces of drum kit go flying.
Everything goes flying. Pete Townsend's haircuts is on fire. He basically went almost deaf in one ear. It's really what caused his hearing loss, or at least it's partly responsible for it. And yeah, I don't know if they actually got in trouble for that or if there was anything that came of that, but
I don't know, but maybe we should link the clip because it's just so fantastic. But even after the big explosion, Pete Townsend's still smashing up his guitar, and then he goes and grabs Tommy Smothers' guitar and starts to smash it too. And I think I heard that there were other like guests in the audience for that. So I think it was like Doris Day was knocked on her ass or something like that. And Mickey Rooney's cheering on like, yeah, this is the greatest thing he's ever seen.
Yeah, no, it's pretty great. And if you get a chance, just check it out on YouTube, because it's so, I mean, you couldn't get away with that today. There would be so many safety rules and stuff, but.
Well, I don't think you were really able to get away with it then either.
No, probably not. No, it just happened. You know, I mean, The Who are an interesting band, and I know we'll get into more of their stuff because there's a few of their albums on here, but I mean, it's interesting to hear where they started out. It's, you know, Keith Moon's drumming is not what I'm used to, really. It's very straight, you know, it's pretty, or for Keith Moon anyway, it's pretty straight, except on My Generation where he kind of lets loose, but I mean, even early on, they were a really good band.
Oh, yeah. Well, one thing I can say about, like, the rhythm section, it's, I mean, whereas Keith is playing more straightforward, he's still hitting harder than, like, other, like, I don't know, rhythm and blues or mod acts of the time. I notice that, like, even in, like, their cover of I Don't Mind, is he's drowning out the singer a little. But, yeah, I notice that he's still playing pretty hard. But, yeah, it's a little bit more straightforward. But that's sort of what you would maybe expect from their first album.
That is true. Yeah, yeah. He and then you got John Entwistle, who's always coming up with these really incredibly complex bass lines. And even here on My Generation, like the bass line is, it's not like you it's not what you expect.
Yeah, because Pete's largely, not entirely, but largely a rhythm player. He doesn't play lead much, but I noticed in a couple of things he did, and he's not bad. He's a pretty good guitar player. I mean, Pete Townsend, he's a pretty good guitar player. But it's generally John Entwistle that is carrying the melody in a lot of cases. It's just a really low down melody because it's on a bass. That and Roger Daltrey singing.
Well, that's the other thing. Roger Daltrey has a really unique voice. I always liked his voice. I think he's a really good singer. Everybody. It's interesting because he. You always know it's him. He's not one of those singers that like he, but no, I mean, nobody else sounds like him. Like he doesn't have any imitators.
There's a lot of, it was something about that period of music and there's very few copycat singers. It's just, it's like everybody was unique. I mean, you can't, Robert Plant, nobody sounds like him. Jimi Hendrix, even when he's singing, nobody sounds like him. It's just, everybody sounded like themselves. They didn't have to. There wasn't like a trope that everybody was following.
All those elements, they're not quite as fleshed out as they would become, you know, later on in their career. But they're there. The germ, the idea, the seeds are there. And they're just starting to grow. And it's really cool to hear the progression. And this is like, oh, this is where all that started in terms of their sound. Because, I mean, this out, like, they, early on, they were, you were talking about, like, they, each band, like, has unique, yes, but I feel like here, they really are sort of trying to fit into the lane of, you know, rock and roll, R&B sort of stuff, whereas later on, like, on Tommy, and then, like, Who's Next, and those later albums, that's when they really became their own thing. And here, it's really good. This is really good, and they're still very unique and distinct, but they're still, they haven't quite found their unique sound.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
It's, they're still doing something very similar to, say, what the Small Faces were doing, and other bands like that. I mean, I guess that's just what sort of mod rock was. They still, I can definitely tell these other bands apart.
We'll move on to the next side of the album, the second side. There's lots more where this came from. So here we go. Here's the first song on the second side called, and this is a song I know, at least, another one of their more popular songs called The Kids Are All Right. All right, and ending the album there with The Ox. Very cool instrumental thing going on there.
Yeah, yeah. That's where John Entwistle got his nickname.
And by the way, that was on the piano.
Nicky Hopkins.
Nicky Hopkins, yeah.
Yeah, and he contributed quite a lot to carrying melodies as well on their studio recordings, especially in the early years.
Yeah, and he played on a lot of people's records. He played... I think he's mostly known for like the Rolling Stones, playing with them.
Yeah, Rolling Stones, the Jeff Beck group.
I mean, I think it's pretty obvious. I really like this album. It's cool to. I've always been a fan of The Who. I never listened to this album front to back. This is a great. I wouldn't say it's their best album, or it's not even my favorite album of theirs. But it's a really solid album. And it's a really solid debut album for any band.
It's a really solid debut album. And considering even like the structure of the album back in the mid 60s when it came to rock albums, it was still a little bit kind of, they were still mostly just a collection of songs and stuff like that. To have a cohesive album was actually a little bit, I mean, I think the Beatles Revolver kind of, or not Revolver, Rubber Soul kind of started that. So yeah, and this one is, it's pretty good for its time for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. It really is just like a collection of songs. The other thing, too, in those days, it was not common to have singles on albums. but they might be the first to have the album centered around a single, because My Generation was released as a single, and it's on the album, and it's the title of the album. This might be the first instance of an album being centered around one song, that being the focal point.
Yeah, maybe. And it's sort of, it's not necessarily a concept album or anything like that, but most of the songs seem to be, they almost seem like extensions of that thought, that idea.
Yeah, it's like the first album with a title track.
I'd also like to point out that the intro to Illegal Matter, you can really hear where the Jam got a lot of their sound from.
Yeah, this influenced a lot of stuff. A lot of that mod. Well, I guess the Jam were sort of a mod band in.
Yeah. Sort of a mod revival, late 70s into the 80s. Yeah.
And this time Pete Townsend was playing a Rickenbacker, so it had sort of that almost jangly sort of thing. You know, it's funny. It's like they started out as like a mod band, but really never really stuck to that. Like they weren't pigeonholed into that.
No, they weren't. You know, oddly enough, like they embraced it, but they weren't pigeonholed. Yeah. Somehow. I guess they just, their sound changed so much they couldn't possibly be pigeonholed or something like that. I don't know.
But they were definitely an interesting band. And so, like, you think about, like, the British invasion bands, and again, it goes back to what we were talking about. Like, in my mind, the big three are the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, and the Who. And three very different bands from each other, just in terms of presentation. Like the Beatles, all like in the early days, they all wore suits and they all, you know, they wrote all their songs. Rolling Stones, and they all played instruments. There's four of them. Rolling Stones, there's five of them, two guitar players, bass player, drummer, and a singer that doesn't play an instrument. And then there's the Who with their a four piece, but just one guitar player, one bass player, a drummer, and also a singer that doesn't play an instrument. And three very different bands, three very different sounds. And it's interesting that, like, we always hear and we always talk about how the Beatles, when they came to America, really sort of took over. But I think there's a broader picture in, like, the British invasion in terms of, like, okay, well, and America saying, well, what else have you got? You know?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and that...
No, that did happen. Yeah. Like, the way I always say it is, like, there was an awakening on the Ed Sullivan Show when a bunch of kids were suddenly watching. Whereas, you know, before they were watching, like, Elvis movies where he would suddenly be singing to a backing track and something. And sure, yeah, he was the biggest thing at the time. Mm-hmm. But I think for a lot of people, seeing the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show was the first time they saw a band actually just, you know, on TV, like showing, oh, look, they're making all that noise by themselves. And then that opened up the rest of the British invasion. And that's why there's like so many bands from that period. So many of them.
And, you know, it's funny. I know we talk about it a lot, but one thing, that's what Tom Petty was saying, like when he was like really young, he met Elvis. So he was like 10 years old and he became obsessed with Elvis and just got all of his records and everything and was obsessed with that. But he just loved listening to it. But when he was like 13 or 14, the Beatles came on Ed Sullivan, and in his seeing the guys play the instruments, he thought, oh, I could do this.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm thinking. It's just that happened to a lot of people. It was just the first time that it didn't, some of the mysticism was taken away from it, and you were just presented with the reality of just four guys playing instruments.
I think what happens, maybe at least a little bit, is if you're thinking in terms of Western music, like obviously American music influenced these British bands, and then the British bands influenced the next generation of American bands, and then the influence keeps going back and forth, and at least for a little bit it did.
It goes back and forth, but it's certainly about by the mid 70s it's getting very muddy. Like the back and forth is they're passing each other. So, you know, there's good stuff coming out of you know, and let's not forget that it happened in Europe and the rest of a lot of places in the world. I mean, it happened all over in Asia. There's so many bands that really took off after rock and roll in South America and stuff like that. Most of these bands are like completely obscure, but they're out there, and they're, some of them are better than others, and they're, you know, there's good stuff. It's but it just goes to show how far reaching like this really this movement was. It's a worldwide movement.
It's really, you're right, it's a worldwide thing, and you're right. I mean, it really opened the floodgates. I mean, this was really an interesting time. I almost wish I could have been there to witness it.
Part of me wishes I could.
Yeah, but I mean, this album really fits in, is just right in the right time for all of that. The other thing that a lot of bands weren't doing is writing their own songs at this time. I mean, the Rolling Stones' first couple albums are mostly covers.
They had a back catalog of blues albums and records and stuff like that to go from. They went quite a while. They could go for quite a while without, you know, writing their own stuff. But eventually they decided to write their own stuff.
And, you know, Pete Townsend, he's writing all the songs, including the lyrics. I don't think he gets enough credit as a songwriter. Maybe he does, I don't know, but I don't think a lot of people realize that he's writing all the songs. He's writing all the lyrics and the music. It's not usual for the sort of non-lead singer of the band to be writing all the lyrics.
I think it's more common than you realize. But most people assume because the singer is singing it. But in a lot of cases, yes, it's the lead singer who's writing and then singing. But it happens in a lot of cases, especially with bands that have more than one writer. Quite often, somebody else in the band is writing a song and then... You know, I guess the idea of the singer singing their own song sort of comes from the Beatles, whereas it's kind of like a rule in the Beatles, you write a song, you sing it. I don't know of too many exceptions to that rule in the Beatles.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. He's writing all the songs, and you're right. I mean, people don't, just because like the singer singing the song, they assume that's... he's the one that wrote it. And I think you're right. I think the Beatles sort of set that idea in people's minds. So yeah, I mean, but I really enjoyed this album. This was a fun listen for me. Think I know the answer, but I have to ask anyway. Would you listen to this again?
Oh yeah, I think I'd listen to this again. Yeah. In fact, and it makes me want to listen to some of their other albums from this period as well. So, you know, it awakens that part of me that just loves this period of time. In music history, it's just, I just love this period, 60s and early 70s, the mod and psychedelic and, you know, proto punk, proto metal stuff, you know, when everything was still just rock and roll and hadn't really turned into anything else before the genres took over.
Exactly. Yeah, no, I agree. I like this era too, and this was a fun listen for me, and yeah, I think it's sort of gotten me into that mindset too, of that 60s 70s sort of period. Definitely. So I mean, this is just a really cool album. I guess we'll end the show there. Thank you so much for listening if you made it this far. We want to hear from you, whether you agree or disagree with our review of this album. You can always reach out to us.
Oh no, but... shite.
You can always reach out to us by going to the contact page of our website, polyphonicpress.com. And while you're there, you can check out previous episodes. And if you'd like to support the show, you can do that by going to buymeacoffee.com/polyphonicpress. It's really easy. You don't need to sign up for anything. And all those links are in the show notes. And I think that just about does it. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
And I'm John Van Dyke.
Take it easy.